Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.
Great pleasure welcoming on SBS French program Mrs. Sharpley Whiting, who holds several positions of responsibility at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome on the French program.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Perhaps tell us more about yourself for our Australian audience. I think I've just mentioned you hold several positions, and you are also chair of French studies at Vanderbilt University.
Well, I'm actually chair of African American and Diaspora Studies at Vanderbilt, but I'm also in the Department of French and Italian, but I hold what they call a name chair or an endowed chair, which is the Gertrude Conaway Vanderbilt Professorship in French and African American and Diaspora Studies. So the intersection between the French and the African American and in Black studies is what, of course, brings us to Josephine Baker, right? So
absolutely. And today we are speaking about her, Josephine Baker, who was inducted in the Pantheon on Tuesday, November 30th. She's the sixth woman to do so and the first woman of color. What was the reaction in the United States?
It's fascinating. It hasn't received as much coverage as in other places. I mean, there was a New York Times editorial. I was really kind of surprised that it wasn't more, you know, hoopla. I think because she's maybe a little bit far removed from the consciousness, and we've got so much going on here that, you know, people don't quite understand the significance of the Pantheon and why, you know, this is, you know, absolutely incredible for her to have achieved. So some do, some don't, but, you know, I mean, for them, it's just, you know, again, there's so much going on between, the January 6th, you know, things and the, you know, the economy and the pandemic and, you know, people just, you know, attempted to digest it. But there was a New York Times editorial, but I found that there's been a lot of coverage globally, which gives you an idea of just how huge she was in the world in her time.
President Macron said, referring to Josephine Baker at Tuesday's ceremony, il n'y a pas plus française que vous. I'd like to for you to tell us a bit more about her growing up in St. Louis, in Missouri, and you yourself, you mentioned that you were born there, and how did segregation and racism affect her?
Well, I mean, St. Louis is an interesting city. Yes, I grew up there, but I grew up there certainly at a time that's very different from Baker's time, but I knew the areas in which she, you know, she grew up. St. Louis was not, I mean, it was a Union city during the Civil War, but it became highly segregated. Tough city to be in, particularly during Baker's time for Black people. And of course, she grew up very, very poor, began working early, married early at 13, divorced and then remarried again by like, you know, 16. So, I mean, times were very different, but it was really hard for her. She became fascinated with, you know, performing. And there were always, you know, entertainment troupes coming through St. Louis. She ends up, you know, running off with one of them, making a living, touring a bit, and finally ends up in New York. And this is where she gets her big break, right? And, you know, she's on, she does a few of the Broadway shows as, you know, backup, you know, kind of, you know, comedian, dancer. And it's actually in the Plantation Club, which is in Harlem. So off Broadway in this Plantation Club that she's discovered, or at least, yeah, that Carolyn Dudley Reagan, of course, you know, invites her to come to Paris. She had, of course, made that overture to Ethel Waters, who turned her down. And so Baker jumped at the opportunity. And even then she was not the star of the show, but once she arrived in Paris, she became the star of the show. So she's a great dancer. She's a beautiful woman, you know, vivacious, ambitious, smart, you know, essentially self-taught, and so, and determined, right? And so that one would say that there's no one more French than her. I think that's an interesting kind of testament because Baker definitely believed, you know, she was French, right? She became a French citizen after her marriage to Jean Lyon. But she never gave up feeling connected to the United States, which is why she had the, you know, the signature song, Je dis amour. So, yeah, but, you know, France threw open the doors of opportunity to Baker, welcomed her in a way that kind of, you know, that cured or at least was a salve for all for the brutality of the racism and discrimination that she suffered in the United States. But she constantly returned to the United States because she really wanted to. I think she wanted to replicate her celebrity, the stardom that she had achieved in France, globally, actually in Europe, in the United States, but it just simply wasn't to be. The racism was too thick. They were not particularly open to her brand of stardom. She also, for even a lot of Black people, represented a kind of, you know, risqueness that they weren't quite ready to accept, given the kind of racial politics in which Black women were consistently being raped and, you know, assaulted in the South. The dynamics were very different on the ground in the United States, but she never stopped trying. I mean, you know, so she ends up, you know, confronting Walter Winchell about, you know, the racism that she believes that she's been subjected to. And of course, he joins the kind of red hunt and, you know, runs her essentially out of the country, helps dries up her contract to the United States. You know, the government's after this woman in Latin America at the time. And so she returns to France. And, you know, this is part of the reason. I mean, she was also an awful, you know, accountant of her own affairs. But this is part of the reason why she loses the chateau and, you know, and things are kind of torn asunder for her. And she's not, you know, welcome back to the United States for, you know, over 10 years with the Kennedys, who invite her, you know, who lift the ban on her and allow her to come back to the United States and participate in the March on Washington. She's the only woman speaker from the main, you know, podium, which says a lot about Baker and her commitment to eradicating, you know, these sorts of injustices in her own country and globally.
So we're talking about 1963, when she was the only woman who went on the podium besides Martin Luther King.
Exactly. Yeah. And others, right? You know, so, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and in the aftermath, of course, of King's assassination, Baker was, you know, asked, you know, the wife wanted to, Coretta Scott King wanted her to actually replace King to lead the movement, but, you know, that was not to be. The sexism was too thick at that particular time for, you know, the civil rights movement to be helmed by women. Although women were clearly, you know, in the forefront, they simply were not afforded those sorts of leadership, that sort of leadership status.
Why did she become involved in the French resistance during the Nazi occupation?
Well, I think it's one of those things, as I said, you know, Baker was very much committed to France. Like, France had been so fabulously open and wonderful and accepting of her. She felt beautiful, you know, in France. Of course, she became wealthy. And she lived like she had never imagined was possible for a poor Black girl from St. Louis, Missouri. So for her, it was the thing that she could do most for her country, right? So it's like, why not get involved in the war effort? Whatever you ask of me, I can make that sacrifice. And so so she began to work with the resistance, you know, putting notes on her sheet music and things of that nature, hiding people at the chateau in Dordogne. So I think, yeah, I mean, for her, that was the ultimate sacrifice, because for her, France had just flung those doors open to her. She loved the country.
And let's talk about the rainbow tribe that she created, the adoption of 12 children from around the world. And I think 11 of them were present at the ceremony on Tuesday.
Yes. I mean, it was an experiment in kind of racial harmony that she hoped to, I guess, demonstrate to the world that children aren't raised, if they're raised a certain way, they, you know, they will not adapt certain views or adopt certain views. And that it was more, I mean, a kind of, you know, nurture versus nature argument here, right? So she's a nurturing mother. She has access, of course, to lots of wealth. So at that particular moment, so she could afford to adopt them and they could live in a certain lifestyle. I don't necessarily know if, you know, she was able to keep the demons out of her, you know, Adele, but she attempted, you know, definitely to try and model this sort of harmony for the world. And so, yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, that the children were there to honor their mother as well. But there's a wonderful naivete in that as well, that, you know, if you could just, you know, teach children something different, they'll act different. But we understand that people sit in ideologies and we live in worlds in which, you know, we're going to be impacted by them. And the only way to avoid that is if you actually raise them in a bubble. And that's just simply not possible.
And I'd like to ask you about your involvement in the film Josephine Baker, The Story of an Awakening. And it was recently shown on our channel here on SBS. And this is how I came across you being, I think, the narrator.
Well, I was being interviewed, right? Like I'm being interviewed now, right? So I guess the directors, I guess that was a kind of Arte was involved in that with Canal Plus, I believe. I think it's, well, my writing on Baker. And I, you know, had a book that came out in 2015 called Bricktops Paris, in which there's a, you know, a pretty significant, you know, chunk on, you know, Baker in one chapter, along with Bricktop, Ada Bricktop Smith, who, like Baker, of course, arrives in Paris and takes it by storm and, you know, achieves this wild success, except that Bricktop was a saloon keeper. And so everyone came to her bar, right? So, yeah, I think that that's how they came across me. And there's a, you know, I wrote a little detective fiction story featuring these two women. So, and from that, you know, they, you know, asked me to come to New York, where they were filming, and they had some wonderful people in the film to talk about various aspects of Baker's life. So I thought they did a wonderful job of actually pulling some footage and facts about Baker that I don't know if a lot of people know or knew. And so, yeah, I thought it was a wonderfully done film.
Just more about your book, Bricktops Paris. It's about African-American women in Paris between the two world wars.
Yes, that's the Bricktops Paris book, yes. It's basically all about African-American women who came to Paris between those two world wars and the kind of community they created, but also the ways in which France was a beacon. Paris in particular was a beacon for them, a beacon of light. It was, you know, also a safe place. It was also a place that you went if you wanted, as an artist in particular, if you wanted to find success, right? The masters were there, you know, painting, sculpture, as well as, you know, the opera. And so you know, it was a cosmopolitan city that for these Black American women to have gone there, been trained there and to live there for a while and to write and perform as well as open businesses and be successful. Once one achieved a kind of success there, if you did return to the States, particularly if you were an artist, the idea was that you definitely had, you know, really achieved a certain standard. So Paris was extremely important. And so even for those women, I mean, Baker, of course, was a citizen. Bricktop was a long-term resident there, as well as Nancy Prophet, who was an artist. You know, there was something, again, the openness there, that they were able to tap into and live and create a world. And also, again, amongst themselves, create a community. They were never cut off from the African-American community. And so when people came to visit, they would seek out one another, right? And so in many respects, Paris was home, but it could feel like home also because there were other people from the United States there, particularly in this book, with other women there who you could, you know, visit with. But there were lots of people over there, right? Paul Ropes and W.E. Du Bois, but, you know, and lots, like I said, they created a kind of community within this larger African-American community that was there.
And Mrs. Sharpley Whiting, are you working on other projects to do perhaps with Josephine Baker?
I've been going back and forth about whether or not I wanted to work on a biography of Baker. Sometimes, you know, you just don't want to give that kind of time to one person, you know, and so in many respects, I kind of like the multi-life biography, but I have been, I just recently completed a piece on Josephine Baker and Jenny Alpha, who's from Martinique. And they're both of their, I guess, commitments during the war effort, but also their time as entertainers. I mean, Alpha was an actress. And so I think it's very interesting when, you know, that what it demonstrates is the ways in which Josephine Baker's light burns so bright that even as this African-American woman, you know, who became French, right, that someone like Alpha, who's absolutely incredible as well, I do wonder, like, when will she get her moment in the sun as well? Because she was quite incredible. The more I read about her and studied her. So that's kind of where I am. But, you know, lately I've gone back to my 19th century roots and have been working on something with Alexandre Dumas and race. So, yeah.
This is Sharpley Whiting. Thank you so much for your time. And we hope to see you one day in Australia.
Oh, yes, not? I visited a while ago. Yeah, if we can get over these lockdowns and everything else.
Thank you for the spotlight on Josephine Baker. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Nice meeting you as well. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.